It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's lovely, lovely. We're waiting for it to get hot one of these days. Global warming. Anyway, we have on today Nick Dranius. He's from the Goldwater Institute. Now, the Goldwater Institute has been doing some yeoman's work going out after whipping butt on the bad guys. And let me tell you what they're doing. This particular issue has been of interest. I've been involved in for a long time. I've been at it from the beginning of this and when it happened and so on, and this is what the deal was. They want, those won't leave us alone, wanted to have public funding of campaigns. Now, the argument, of course, is that, well, then the only special interest you would have then would be the government. I'm going, okay, you know, we'll see how that works out. Well, we'll get into some of the details about it and everything, and I certainly have my opinion. But we have Nick Dranius from the Goldwater Institute that was involved, and this went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And I want to go from the beginning to where we are now, because they had a, you know, I don't know if it's a big win, but they definitely have been, you know, chipping away at this thing. But there are many more important issues involved at this, the involvement of creating a ruling class that keeps funding the ruling class ruling us. And this was just another cog in the machine, and I saw it coming, and I could see what was happening, and we did our bit as activists here being real butt heads about it. But the Libertarian Party, think about this. If you're running for governor, as we have, Barry Hess is the third time running for governor, been whipping up on him for a long, making all kinds of fun. The first year that he ran in 2002, he qualified for clean election money by collecting the money. You get $5,000 or $1,000 or whatever it was, $5 contributions, and he got it. But he didn't turn it in to take the money. Because the point that he was making was, he goes, yeah, of course. Yeah, we can make it. We can get the stuff. We get the money. We get $1 million of taxpayer funding when you got libertarians making this argument. We are against social and economic welfare, but we'll take political welfare so we can tell more people how much we're against social and economic welfare. How's that going to work? It won't. We don't. But everybody we're running against, or a lot of them, are getting government money. You start to see the drift. So, how close do you hold your principles? Nick Dranius, tell us all about it, man. Start from the welcome to the show, first off. How you been?
Hey, I'm doing great. This has been a great week. And thank you for having me on again. If anyone wants to know more details about what I'm about to talk to, they can go to our website at www.goldwaterinstitute.org. And you can find all of our legal filings and a lot of op-eds and other general discussion of the case there. But, no, we're thrilled. The Supreme Court, on an emergency application, the kind of thing that only people on death row looking for some stay of execution 1 minute before midnight ever use, well, the Supreme Court, looking at an application just like that, stopped matching funds. It stopped the matching funds component of the clean election system from being effective during this election cycle for all intents and purposes, and thereby saved free speech for this election cycle.
Okay, ballots. I want to get into this, you know, save free speech. Was it at risk, and how was it, and what's it? Start from the beginning. Now, how much history do you have on the beginnings of the clean election cycle? I mean, I have my recollections, but, I mean, can you start from the beginning?
Been a long, hard slog, not only by the Goldwater Institute, but also by the Institute for Justice. We started our case in August of 2008, a few months after the Supreme Court, in a case called Davis versus FEC, ruled that the government cannot construct campaign finance regulations that deter and disincentivize people from exercising their right to free speech. And the particulars of that case involved something called the Millionaires Amendment. And the law in the federal system said that if you spent money above a certain amount, if you were a millionaire who spent above a certain amount, then that would allow your competing opposing candidates to raise their contribution limits and to accept more money than they otherwise could in response to your spending. The argument was made that that basically deterred and disincentivized millionaire candidates from spending money above that limit, and that you are entitled under the First Amendment to be free from being deterred from exercising your First Amendment rights by the government. That argument won. So I looked at that case in June of 2008 when it came down, and I said to myself, there is no doubt that this seals the fate of Arizona's matching fund system. Because in Arizona, you don't just get elevated contribution limits. The way it works is once you spend money or raise money beyond a certain threshold called a spending limit, your dollars will trigger dollar for dollar nearly government subsidies to your opponents. So if you spend a dollar over the $14,000 spending limit, your opponent, each one of them, if you have several, gets a dollar from the government. And if you face three or four opponents who are all taking government cheese, then every dollar you spend will result in $3 to $4 being spent against you. And that's a tremendous disincentive and deterrent on exercising your First Amendment rights, spending money in projecting your message to the public. So I said to myself, there is no way that can stand in light of this decision that came down on the Millionaires Amendment. So in August, we ended up filing suit to defend the rights of candidates in the 2008 election cycle from matching funds. Now, the challenge that we had at that point was the fact that the election was already underway. We had waited from June until August before filing our suit because we had hoped that the Institute for Justice would take on the case and prosecute to an immediate injunctive request, you know, to ask for matching funds to be blocked. But for whatever reason, they did not. And when they did not, we decided we had no choice but to do it on our own. So we filed our own case in August of 2008. And within days of filing suit, we got an initial preliminary ruling from the court that she agreed with us that matching funds, this matching funds component of the Clean Elections Act was unconstitutional under this case dealing with the Millionaires Amendment. But because we were in the middle of an election and she felt it would be unfair to change the rules of the game in the middle of the election, she didn't give us the relief of blocking matching funds. And we asked for it again 3 weeks later. And she again said, I agree with you, it's unconstitutional, but we're in the middle of the general election now, so we're not going to block matching funds. And then for the next year, the state forced us into protracted litigation. I mean, I think we took 20 depositions, which are sworn statements of various witnesses. We had three expert witnesses retained by all the people involved in the case. We traveled around the country to take their depositions. Basically, the state forced us to spin our wheels and spend thousands of man hours and woman hours prosecuting our case when they should have known the writing was on the wall from June of 2008. But eventually, we did get an injunction in January this year from Judge Silver in the district court, and she struck down matching funds, but she also said she wanted to put a stay on it until the Ninth Circuit could rule. Well, the Ninth Circuit is not exactly the best friend of limited government and isn't the greatest friend of First Amendment principles either. And unfortunately, after briefing everything in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on May 21st, they ruled against us, and they basically made stuff up. They said that an example of them making stuff up in their decision, they claimed that Fife Symington spent time in jail, that he was pardoned and not acquitted, and all these other things, which just were patently not true. The Ninth Circuit didn't even read half of our arguments or mention them. We had this decision that was just, frankly, so riddled with error that we just thought we had no choice but to go to the Supreme Court. Now, We had no real vehicle except for what's called an emergency application under the All Writs Act, which is a law that goes back hundreds of years that allows you to beg, basically, for help from any court in the land, including the Supreme Court, when you have extraordinary circumstances. And that law is what you typically you'll find people on death row using to try to get their last-minute appeal heard before they're fried. Well, we use that same route. And the first chance we got at it, Justice Kennedy, who is responsible for determining these kinds of things, because he rides the Ninth Circuit, and that means he's serving.
Okay, now wait a minute, yep. Nick. You're coming up on a break. That's a good place to stop, because we're going up to the Supreme Court. We have this. It's going to get ruled on. You're on death row. We need help, man. We need help. So that's where we're going to come back with Nick Dranius from the Goldwater Institute on the government giving out money to match other people that are not taking government money. Now, we'll get into the details of this, but we're getting the story good from Nick. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, where we got Nick Dranius from the Goldwater Institute telling us all about the fight for liberty. You know, I tell you what this issue really is about. I remember I've got my own clean election stories, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line is this. I go, you know, look, I know what you guys want. You guys want to be able to have the same thing that Japan has. You want to be able to control and fund and regulate and who can say what and everything on elections, everything that's being said, who can say what, when, where, how, and you can't criticize here, you certainly can't criticize the government, and you got to have it in a box this big and put it up there, and you can only say, and this is how. And I'm going, man, I see where this is going, because, you know, this is our Constitution and our American concept of freedom is that I get to say and or do whatever I want with whatever's mine. They're going, no, not up to this point. So when you got the billionaire Bloomberg up there running for whatever, let's say Bloomberg lived in Arizona. Well, the idea, what they want to accomplish, is that anybody that would qualify for the clean elections, they get matched for everything that he's spending. And I'm going, that's like a lot of money, man. And, you know, you've eliminated, oh, we got to eliminate special interests. And I'm going, what, so the only special interest is the government? I'm going, no, I feel all kinds of warm and fuzzy about that one. So I'm interested in this. I have a lot of my own, you know, stories on this and how this is really plays out and who's taking it back, because it was supposed to get new people in, you know, not so many incumbents, not, and it's turned into being an incumbent protection act. And we're up to the Supreme Court now. Nick has gone through the argument saying, look, there's no way that this can be constitutional, certainly with a precedent that was recently set. So now we're in a situation to where you're up to the Supreme Court. They decided to take this and they go, all right, we're going to decide this issue. And they did what, Nick?
They blocked the issuance of the matching funds component of the clean election system, the dollar for dollar match, right on the eve of the primary election cycle beginning. It just happened on June 8th last week. And that's an extremely unusual move, unless the Supreme Court basically is saying the Ninth Circuit got it completely wrong. So we are thrilled. It tells me that the Supreme Court, after Citizens United, is going to walk the talk. They're not just going to be talking about keeping government out of the marketplace of ideas. They're going to slam it. They're going to body slam it when they see the government trying to shape the marketplace of ideas into what the government wants to see. And see, to me, that's the fundamental. Not even so much the fact that you're punishing people with the issuance of matching funds for exercising their First Amendment rights. I mean, that's a component. What to me is the most pernicious thing about the clean election system and the matching funds aspect of it in itself is the fact that it's the government deciding how to shape the marketplace of ideas, deciding what kind of influence can be disproportionate or proportionate, how to level the playing field, how to decide whether somebody's having too much influence or too little influence. There is nothing more dangerous than that principle, the principle that the government can get engaged in the marketplace of ideas and start shaping winners and losers in that marketplace, because that's precisely what we want the government not to do.
Okay, now wait, let's expand on that concept, because let me give you my spiel. I am for the freedom of me giving my entire gazillion-dollar inheritance to whoever I feel like it in any amount, a gazillion dollars to candidate, you know, number 17, and say, here, go spend it on whatever you want, and I trust you, and get new sneakers and haircuts and go run for office and be somebody. That freedom is what I'm looking for. So how do you kind of, you know, how do you use that rhetoric on something like that? Should there be campaign limits? Should I have to fill out forms? Should I everybody know who I am? How far are you willing to go?
Well, I think that if you want to go there, there's no way to get there while things like matching funds exist, or when outright censorship exists, as was in the case of the Citizens United case, where you literally had a documentary being censored from the airwaves because it didn't comply with certain campaign finance laws. You're never going to get to the point where you have no disclosure requirements and no contribution limits if you can't blow away outright censorship and outright subsidization of hostile viewpoints by the government. So whether I personally believe in that or not, I mean, I've got my own thoughts on it, and some of it I'm not entirely sure about. You know, for example, on the contribution limit side, I agree that by and large contributions are not correlated with corruption, but at certain amounts and in certain contexts and certain political cultures, there may be a correlation, and I'm not yet convinced one way or the other on whether that is off limits for regulation. For example, if you were in Louisiana and millionaires routinely were shown to buy influence, literally buy influence through giving unlimited amounts of money to candidates, I'm not yet at a point where I would say as a matter of law in all cases in all circumstances that that could not be regulated. But with respect to Arizona's tiny contribution limits where you can't give more than $840 to a candidate in an election, that's ridiculous. There's no one is that cheap that they can be bought off for that kind of money, and if they are, the chances are they wouldn't be running for an election that way. They'd be just taking bribes. So, the bottom line for me is that whatever the contribution limits are, they have to be hugely higher than where they're at today, and that if there are going to be any contribution limits, there has to be a real hard analysis of the connection between contributions and corruption, which isn't just saying, oh, well, look at all the things that are reported in the newspaper. Ooh, that means there's corruption. There has to be actual proof. And it has to be a direct connection to the political culture at the time.
Oh, man, I got an opinion. But first, before I get to that, I want to make sure that we discuss what the ruling causes. Here in Arizona, we have the incumbent, Jan Brewer, is running for governor again after she took the position from being Secretary of State when Janet Napolitano became Homeland Security Director. So now she's the incumbent Republican governor running for office again. She obviously knows how the system works. She was Secretary of State. So she's going, okay, I got my goodies. I'm going to get some more goodies. I get some more goodies. And when somebody else spending some money makes more goodies, I get more goodies. Now, when she gets the amount of money in the primary, whoever wins the primary election, automatically the next day almost, I mean, boom, you get another big giant chunk of money for being the winner in the primary and public money to run for governor in the general. How much is that dollar amount?
Well, she could have gotten out of Buzz Mills. His spending could have generated for her $1.4 million or more in matching funds. And that's on top of all the benefits you're talking about in terms of incumbency. She can throw press conferences whenever she wants. She can get on TV or radio anytime she wants. So this is more than an even match for what Buzz Mills would spend. This would be just more of a
swamping. Okay, now let me go ahead and ask, let's answer the question so that we're not confusing the audience, because they don't know Buzz Mills, who the heck's that. Okay.
Yep.
So Mills is a Republican candidate running on his own money without clean election. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. He's a millionaire, self-made man who wanted to spend his own money and therefore is, by anyone's standard, incorruptible from spending his own money. He wanted to spend his own money freely without inhibition, and he couldn't do that knowing that for every dollar that he spent, Governor Brewer already has the advantages of incumbency, was going to get a dollar. And he even faced a worse situation because he also had another subsidized candidate he was facing by the name of Dean Martin, who already had the advantages of a name, I would have to say. And so every dollar that he would spend would also go to Dean. So he found himself in a situation where by spending $1.4 million over a spending limit, he faced $2.8 million being spent against him.
And Dean Martin is the state treasurer.
Exactly. So you have, you know, an outsider trying to break into the system being squashed by swamping amounts of spending by subsidized candidates who already have the advantages of incumbency.
Okay, so when we come back, we're going to see how much money they didn't get that they were expecting, but what happens after we go through the Republican primary, going into the general. This, and then we'll go ahead and get my opinion on limits to freedom. We'll talk about that.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Less conversation, a little more action. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more pride, a little less fun. A little less fight, a little more spark. Close your mouth and open up your heart. And maybe satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby.
Yeah, satisfy me. A little bit more action and a little less conversation. You know, we have Nick Dranius on. Am I saying it right, Dranius or Dranius?
Either way, if you're feeling ethnic, say Dranius.
Dranius, man, sounding good. Is that Greek?
It is.
Oh, all right. So here we have a situation. I want to make sure the audience understands. This has been, nothing is done without it being done everywhere on the planet, or there's an effort to do it everywhere. I'll guarantee you there's some kind of clean election, public funded election process. There's, you know, we're going to do this because we love the people. No, by the way, you don't mind if I get my cut. You know, that's going on everywhere. We knew this was happening. I don't know how many states it passed in, how big it is, don't care. I worry about Arizona. Use it as an example. This is what's going on. You ever get a situation to where you have an opportunity to have an impact on election, it will take place. I'll give you a good example. They go, Ernie, how do you feel about clean elections? How do you feel about spending limits? How do you feel about, and I go, you know, it's very simple. From a libertarian perspective, I only look at one thing, money follows power. That's it. You eliminate the power, you'll eliminate the money. So I'm going, okay, you know, they go, well, what about, I was running against Jane D. Hull. She was Speaker of the House, going for Secretary of State. We're running, going back and forth, a big deal about she took some paying golf clubs from somebody one time. The Democrats making a big deal about it. Ernie, what do you think? And I'm going, you know, I what difference does it make? If you take away the power to give favors, you take away this income tax thing, you take away the social and economic engineering, the blah, 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 you eliminate all of that, all of a sudden all this money trying to get to this power to influence the power goes away. Why? Because they don't have the power. And I don't care how many limits you put on stuff. If you have the power to grant goodies to somebody, I guarantee you the money will go there. Guaranteed. I don't care what limits you put on it. I don't know. I don't care how much disclosure you have. If you have the power to socially and economically engineer people, and they're going to do it to, you know, somebody's advantage or at the detriment of somebody else, and there's somebody has an interest in it, here comes the money. Here comes the money. There's nothing you can do to stop it. So, if you are going to have any kind of limits, fine. You know, limit the power. If you're going to have any kind of limits on me going up against the power, well, then you're a bad guy. Because I want to be able to exercise my, you know, there might be some gazillionaire out there that said, oh, Ernie, you want, here's $2 million, go get them. Okay? And what if I'm a scumbag? Well, hopefully, you know, you have an informed populace. That's really the whole point. But from all of these battles, that hopefully you have a populace, because they're going to get informed one way or the other, because here comes the education with the economy right now. They're going to become really educated. You watch. So you have a populace. They're going to have to take the responsibility, and certainly with the internet and access to information, that they can make an informed decision on their own with enough information out there. And heck, they can just go to the guy's webpage. That is the freedom I'm looking for. I'm looking for the opportunity for me to be able to express myself as much and in as many ways as possible. Any limit on that, you know it's going to go down the dark side. And the clean election thing, it keeps changing. And this matching thing, what happens is you have people that are going, you know, there's a limit. It's a million whatever. Fine, I'm rich. I want to go save the planet or take over the planet or be Dr. Evil or whatever. They come in, I'm going to spend $3 million. And they go, fine, then we're just going to take more tax money and give it to this guy to compete against you. That's forced speech. As a taxpayer, they're forcing the money from me to go and support someone that I may not agree with. Wasn't that issue brought up and lost on, Nick?
Early on, that was one of the things that my immediate supervisor, Clint Bolick, in one of his first rounds at it, tried to challenge back in 2002. And unfortunately, the Arizona Supreme Court rejected the challenge. The Supreme Court said that you can basically force people through their tax dollars to support speech they disagree with. That's why we took a new angle. That's why we worked with the case that we had. And while I agree with almost everything you just said, in fact, 99.9% of it.
Oh, give me the one you don't, man. That's not the one I care about.
I have a certain degree of uncertainty of my own knowledge of politics and history and culture to say that I would never support any sort of campaign contribution limit under any circumstances just strikes me as something I'm not prepared to say yet. I'm just not convinced of that. I think it's conceivable that reasonable minds could find a circumstance, maybe Tammany Hall in New York City, where you have a demonstrable history of corruption following contributions in large amounts, where somebody could make a reasonable case, at least for some temporary measure, to bring things back in line. And keep in mind that even in a purely limited government, the government can always have its powers abused. I mean, if all the government did was policing and military, I'm sure there'd be military contracts and policing contracts that would be abused. So unless you're getting rid of government, that threat of abuse and corruption is always going to be in government.
So on my way.
In my mind, I'm willing to agree with you 99.9% of the time, but I'm also willing to keep my mind open in extreme circumstances to a possibility that there may be a justification for some sort of contribution limit or disclosure requirement.
You know, this reminds me, you know who Butler Schaefer is, right? I'm sure you're probably familiar with the name. Butler Schaefer, he writes a lot on Lou Rockwell, and he was the law professor of Mark J. Victor, my partner in the Freedom Summit. And I remember every few years he'll do this exercise with his constitutional law students. And he goes, all right, I want you to go ahead and write me a constitution that I can't pervert into doing whatever the heck I want. Well, of course, they'll come up with whatever. And this one guy, you know, probably he thinks he's got. You know, the only thing the Constitution does is it regulates time zones. You know, we're going to regulate time. We're going to say we have, you know, the Constitution does time. Okay, it's good. This zone there. He goes, that's easy. He goes, no, none of your time shall be spent funding or doing this, and so much of your time shall be in the service of and spending. I mean, you know, once you start, it never stops. That's my point. So it's not that I would think it's a good or bad idea or you could make a good argument for something. I just know how it's going to be abused. It's not the limits on the individual that's the problem. It's the limits on me to oppose or to regulate me against someone that would use the power of government against me. If I am limited, it's like saying you can't have a machine gun. I'm going, why? Well, because you might use it. Well, I might need to use it. You know, it's that kind of argument. So so let's get past that. That's why I take these hardcore freedoms to answer what's the question thing. I can always make the argument that, you know, more freedom is always going to be better because it always has bad guys that want to abuse it. Because I tell you, government power and the shiny badge always draws the worst sort of individual. It's not the best of us. They always want to protect us against the evil in society. Well, guess who's the ones that want the shiny badge? It's the bad guys. Let's go. You know, sanction them. Let's go give them power. Let's go delegate to them the authority. You know, I'm like, oh, this is stinking thinking. So Here we have, in this situation, in clean elections, one of the early arguments was, is that, in fact, my wife, we did this. She had a parking ticket, and we found that it was like $1.70 of it or something that would go to clean elections. You know, it was part of the on civil fines and so on. You had these. So what did she do? She just took that much out of it, sent it in, and said, I'm only paying this much. Let's go to court. You want it? Let's go. They didn't want to play, so they finally just dropped it. But there was someone, there was a state legislator or something that said, nope, I'm not paying this. I had some fine, and that went to court. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't follow exactly that argument.
The argument was is that you were doing forced speech.
Yeah.
You know, so the force, you say, no, I do not want to subsidize someone else's speech.
Yeah, it just lost. See, the problem is reason why it had to lose is because the government forces people to support the speech of things they don't agree with all the time. So the court knew, the court knew that if it struck it down in this instance, it would unleash a tidal wave of future cases striking down the government's power to engage in speech with your tax dollars. And although I agree with the argument, I think it is meritorious. I think that the government crowds out private speech when it engages in speech with taxpayer funds, and no speech the government engages in is truly free as long as it comes from taxpayer funds. Nevertheless, in this point in time of history, it was not a decision I think a court could really expect a court to reach. And that's part of the strategy with this. You ask, why don't we go after contribution limits, disclosure limits, and all this? And even though I agree with you 99.9% of the time, there's a tactical element to what you challenge and when you challenge it. And you want to go for the big picture items first, because as long as the government can censor and subsidize the opposition and swamp you with opposing speech using your own tax dollars, you're never going to get to a point where fighting over disclosure and contribution limits makes a real difference in the outcome. And so, you know, tactically, it's important to understand that we attack the big picture items first, and we hopefully establish broad principles that bring everything else into line.
And I just want to make sure that the arguments don't stab in the back those very principles. Yeah, that's my point. You know, I'm out here, you know, screaming the principle. I just want to make sure that's upheld. Even when we get a win, it's a win, you know. And we'll talk about it more in details when we come back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, the show must go on here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We have Nick Dronius from the Goldwater Institute doing battle against the man and the womans. You know, trying to take away all our goodies and redistribute it to their friends and buddies, and we're not allowed to go out after them without every bit that we. It's like a fantasy movie where you got the wizard. The more you put in, the more it comes back against you. You know, and it's the more you oppose government, the more they get to come back against you. Even though you're just doing it on your. I don't want to play in the government game. I want to spend my own money. I want to do. So tell us about this gentleman that's running in the Republican primary, spending his own money. I mean, why is he doing this? Who is he? Does he have a chance? What's going on there? I hadn't even heard of him.
Yeah, well, I didn't know who he was at first. And in fact, frankly, I didn't know if he was a real candidate to begin with, because there's this trick that people play with matching funds where rich people will run as traditional self-finance candidates in order to trigger matching funds to their preferred participating candidates. The way it worked a couple of years ago was a guy named Sam George, a millionaire, ran for what we have is a corporation commission office, and he ended up triggering through his contributions and expenditures that he made over $1 million to people running on the same slate in matching funds. So we didn't know at first that he was a real candidate either, but it turned out he was very much a real candidate. He's a self-made.
Okay. Yeah. Before we get to that, let's go ahead and define what you were talking about. Let's say you have corporation commission at the time. It was probably more than one candidate. Was it one, or was there three or two up or something? Was it just one?
Well, it's a five-person board, and there are three open seats.
Okay, so three open seats. You have a gentleman running with two other guys, and they're going to get X amount of campaign dollars. So all the money goes to him. They get the rich guy to run, and he gets a lot of contributions or whatever, and he gets up, and it triggers two of the other guys that he wants and however many candidates there were. It gets them a gazillion more dollars just because he knows how the system's played, correct?
Exactly. It was hilarious. They had the same campaign consultant. They coordinated their message. messages. This guy would spend money deliberately triggering matching funds to his two teammates, as they called themselves, the Solar Team in this case. So and over the course of the election, he triggered through matching funds $1 million to his teammates.
Okay.
So the point being that you can manipulate the system very easily, and basically it leverages all of the influence that supposedly is associated with private influence only with government funds. But in any event, some folks thought that maybe Buzz Mills was doing the same thing, that he was just going to run to deliberately trigger money to Dean Martin and Brewer. And I had my doubts at first, but no, it turns out that he is a true champion of free speech. He actually joined in our last appeal to the Supreme Court and filed a friend of the court brief saying, please, court, intervene, stop these matching funds from being distributed to punish me for exercising my First Amendment rights, spending money on my campaign. So I'm very grateful to the Buzz Mills campaign. I think that putting a real face on it and pointing out that someone who is incorruptible from any perspective in terms of spending his own money that he has earned from no one else on his campaign, punishing him for doing that, obviously doesn't serve any anti-corruption purpose. It revealed the punitive purpose of matching funds, which is to keep people from challenging the system, as you put it, to make sure that anyone fighting the system is opposed with greater than equal and opposing speech funded by the government. And so he came to our rescue, as did the Supreme Court when they heard his case and our case in this last round.
I'm glad to hear somebody's out there at least giving an opportunity for us to see what's what. Because this happened when they first, it was not too many years after they started clean elections. There was a big thing to where I think it was at least two or three libertarians. They weren't libertarians, but they filed as libertarians, went and collected because it was easy to get on the ballot as a libertarian. They go, hey, cool. They went ahead and filed for this, and they got tens of thousands, like $60,000 or something. I mean, they just, you know, ka-ching, and they were having parties at bars at ASU as campaign fund outreach kind of things where they're buying everybody drinks. You know, the drinks are on us, you know, so they just went stupid. Well, come to find out, he was the son, he was a college student, and the son of incumbent Democrat senator from Tucson. You know, so it was Ted Downing, I think it was, and his son. And they just knew how the system worked. Go, hey, well, we can do this. Fill out the form, get this, do that, done. And we get free money? Cool. Well, they ran as libertarian. They go, the libertarian. They go, really? Was it really? Was it really? You know, I mean, so it became, as time went on, people understood it wasn't really libertarian. And libertarian, even though we could easily qualify for this kind of stuff, we could do this, we don't, because it's a philosophical thing. It is, we understand, we do not want to be beholden, sure as heck, to the government. It's why you have national, even though you can qualify, and Barry did in 2002. He qualified for it, could have got over a million men done, didn't do it. And the thing is that at a federal level, when you have matching funds running for president, libertarians don't do that either, even though a lot of people are advocating for it. But it's to understand what the real corruption is, and they'll use corruption and the threat of corruption and all this other stuff to justify taking a gun to your forehead to take your money and to redistribute to those that want to rule you. Big, bad idea. And to certainly limit what someone wanting to come in and challenge the system can come in, spend his own money to do it, and then for every dollar he does, he gets $2 spending against him because they match everything he puts into two different candidates running on clean election. And whatever government calls something, I guarantee it's the opposite of whatever they call it.
Let me just emphasize one thing. This is even bigger than campaigns. You got the Federal Trade Commission right now talking about various schemes to tax and subsidize the media to prop up the legacy media in it with government money. You've got talk of bailing out of work journalists and failing newspapers with government money. You've got talk of taxing things like iPad to support book, you know, publishers and so forth. The problem with this matching funds concept is it could translate to all sectors of the media. You could imagine a situation where if you go past a certain ratings threshold as a radio talk show host, that it would then trigger access to all of your competitors to a big fund of government subsidies to keep them competing against you. And eventually, in this kind of system, whether it be talk radio or TV or anything else, in a system where the media runs like a business, the subsidized media media in the long run are going to outcompete the unsubsidized media. And then when that happens, the strings will follow the money. The federal government and other governments will then start demanding conditions be complied with in order to access these subsidies. And you've now achieved, through what I call fiscal engineering, censorship that you couldn't otherwise achieve without direct censorship.
Oh, it's already happening. What do you think federal licenses for radio and television stations are anyway? They want to bring it to the internet. Freedom's Phoenix is doing really well. So what happens? They're going to have, oh, well, if you want to have high speed and access to and be on this net 2.0 whatever, blah, 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 you have to pay extra. You're going to have to do this. You're going to have, that's where this net neutrality thing is starting to come in. And I'm going, okay. So we have licenses. What do they say? In that license, we operate. You ever hear this in their licensing thing? They'll put this one time a year. You'll hear the general manager of the local NBC affiliate, and he'll get up broadcasting in the public interest. Well, the reason they say that is because the license is granted if you meet certain minimum criteria. Well, part of that is that you're, you know, public service announcements. You're doing something in the public interest. So who gets to define that? The government. So what do? They go, all right, well, you have so much airtime that needs to go to fill in the blank. During the Clinton administration, they go, hey, you know, we'll work a deal with you. The network's saying, look, this is important to us because it's commercial airtime. We sell this time. This is valuable time. How can we get out of this? Okay, we're going to do you a solid, all right? This is what we're going to do. If you put an anti-drug message, an anti-blah, blah, blah, and a pro-government, what you call it, if you put this kind of message in your sitcom, well, then we'll waive, you know, you having to spend airtime doing broadcasting in the public interest kind of stuff. Absolutely, not a problem. Social economic engineering, here it comes. And it's because of the licensing of government. And they don't have this in the internet yet, and they're going to want to. And it's going to come at the hands of promise, purse string, blah, blah. We're going to get the New York Times. We're going to save you. We're going to, while you're going down in flames, we're going to help you transition into the internet, and we're going to give you a subsidy, de la, whatever. You know, this is, I can see it coming, Nick. Don't you see it?
Absolutely. And the thing is, the case law was developing to actually get to the point where a lot of these licensing conditions that you're complaining about would be challengeable in court today. And now the left or the progressives, whoever else is behind this matching fund subsidizing the media concept, have shifted from their future projects are no longer licensing based so much as based on subsidies and targeted taxes. Then they can say, oh, well, we're not conditioning a license. We're just giving subsidies to ensure more speech rather than less speech happens. And they change the terms of debate. So the key thing that all your listeners need to understand is that we are constantly battling against an enemy that is changing the terms of debate all of the time. Even when we achieve advances in limiting the government's ability to regulate our speech, the other side is concocting new and more complicated ways of achieving the same ends indirectly. This matching funds concept, whether it's applied to campaigns or whether it's applied to talk show radio or anything else, is the vanguard of the next effort to indirectly censor speech.
Amen, brother. Oh, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate you coming on, and I'm glad you are doing what you're doing. I'm glad we got to talk about this, and we'll see. I think we should address this as we get further into the campaign process, because this promise of money, then taking it away, then spending of it, and then, you know, your efforts, and they don't know what the heck to do. I don't know how they're, because I'm sure they already had the money spent that they were going to get from the government. So now what's Jan Brewer incumbent going to do? Just call a press conference every day? Wouldn't surprise me.
It seems like it.
that's what happens anyway. But Nick, thanks for coming on. Goldwater, give out a website you want them to have, man.
It's www.goldwaterinstitute.org, www.goldwaterinstitute.org. And thanks for having me on again.
Hey, Nick, great. We'll be calling you soon. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Again, just a little bit for the next hour.